Welcome back to The Trendline from the SiriusXM studios in Washington, D.C. Here's Kristen Soltis Anderson.
I'm joined now by Rich Tao, president of Engages. He is a friend of the show. We love having him on because he is always out in the field doing focus groups of swing voters. In particular, these focus groups are of people who voted for Donald Trump in 2016, but then switched and voted for Joe Biden in 2020. They're exactly the kinds of voters who are going to play a huge role in whether the midterms in November are a red wave and these voters come back to the GOP in big numbers, or do they stick around and try to keep Democrats with, if not majority, something close to it? Rich, thank you for joining the show.
It's great to be back. Thank you.
So tell me a little bit about the big topics on your mind and on these voters' mind in your last focus groups.
So the most recent groups we did was on January 11th, and we spent a lot of time talking about the condition of American democracy. And what I was particularly curious about was whether these swing voters see the issues around democracy in America the way the media sees it. And it turns out that these swing voters are concerned about the condition of American democracy, but they're not concerned about it the way it's being portrayed, like on CNN or MSNBC, for example, where it's sort of crisis du jour, American democracy in peril. When's the Civil War starting? These people don't see it that way. Most of them don't. There are a couple who do, but most of them don't. The way they do see it is the way I think I would have heard people talk about the crisis in American democracy 10 or 15 years ago, which is, you know, I don't trust politicians. I don't know if they're telling me the truth. There's all sorts of corruption with donors skewing the political process. It's almost as though, you know, January 6th didn't happen for them. Not that they don't think it didn't happen. They do believe it happened. They know it happened. But they see the problem as going much deeper, the rot being much deeper and longstanding.
Yeah, this was something that, you know, in the focus groups I did about 2 weeks ago for the New York Times, you know, we did these separate Republican and Democratic groups. So we were looking at a very different audience than this, like, really crucial group that you're looking at. But it was so interesting for the Republicans. They weren't in January 6th, just wasn't something that had really been. I mean, when it had happened, they said, oh, I saw these images. I thought it seemed pretty horrifying, but I also understood why people were so upset. This kind of their message. But the Democratic group, it was interesting. Many of them were like, yes, January 6th was one of the biggest days of 2021. But many of them also sympathized is too strong a word, but they said, look, there is a lot of rot. There is a lot of the special interests run things. The average person doesn't get their voice heard, et cetera. So I get why there's pent up anger and frustration that could very easily be channeled into something like January 6th. Both Republicans and Democrats sort of shared this, the system is rigged and broken and elites are favored and the average guy can't get ahead feeling across party lines. So my question then is, you know, in a lot of surveys, when they ask about the state of American democracy, you're right. In fact, it's oftentimes I will see plenty of polls where it's Republicans who are more concerned about the state of Republican or the state of American democracy than Democrats, which cuts really counter to this idea that voters think the primary problem is a slide into authoritarianism. But did you ask any of these voters, you know, do you think that things have gotten worse? You know, did the Trump presidency make things worse, or was this just a continuing trend in the way things have been all along?
I didn't ask it that way. I had one woman who was quite animated in her comment, basically said, you know, up until Trump, I thought, you know, politicians fudge a little bit, but now they'll basically just go and say things that are so extreme, you'll throw up your hands and you'll say, he really said that? So she saw a difference in kind under Trump. For the most part, I'm always trying to see what in the popular media sort of gets through to these folks, and the sort of the endless, relentless narrative, like, you know, Don Lemon on CNN every night, you know, crisis in American democracy, you know, that type of thing. It's all Trump all the time. And these folks just, most of them aren't there. But I should say, I had a couple of people who did flag these particular concerns, the ones that are in the popular media. It wasn't like everybody dismissed them or ignored them. I had a few people who did take them very seriously and talked quite emphatically about it, but they were in the minority. The majority was much more focused on these longer term trends that are eating at the pillars of American democracy.
Now, right now in Washington, voting issues are front and center in the Senate, at least, even if they are not front and center in the minds of most voters. This week, Republicans in the Senate, in addition to Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema, you have a couple of Democrats who are not in favor of getting rid of the filibuster, even to advance something like legislation around voting issues. And so, you had some comments from President Biden that were then sort of backed up a little bit by Vice President Harris saying, I worry that the midterm elections could be legitimate. So you have doubt being sowed about whether the elections are going to be legitimate coming from both sides at this point. It's very different in nature. I'm not trying to fully both sides the issue, but it is now the case that you have very prominent Democrats sowing doubt about whether the elections will be legitimate. Their concerns, of course, are in two different buckets. So the first, Republicans tend to be more concerned about voter fraud and will illegitimate ballots be cast? Is mail-in voting going to be used to sort of do something nefarious? To what extent were concerns about things like voter fraud or expanded mail-in voting, changes to voting laws as a result of COVID-19. Was that a concern for any of these Trump-Biden voters?
I didn't spend a lot of time probing on that, and it did not come up organically.
Got it.
I was really trying to ask more sort of open-ended types of questions about the larger issues, about the potential for a larger conflict. I asked about a quote from David Brooks in a New York Times column that had appeared recently, where he talked about basically I think he described it as a mob outside, in the center of the country, thinking that the people on the coast, the oligarchy on the coast were looking down on them. And that was the central problem in American democracy. And these people said, no, that's the way the country's always been run. That people on the coasts basically are the ones who are better educated, and they're the ones who look down on the people in the middle. But that's sort of the nature of America. That's the way it's been since the founding, as far as they were concerned. And this wasn't some new conflict between the coast and middle America. So it was just very interesting to see that they just didn't. They weren't accepting a lot of the premises that are part of the media narrative right now. And that's really where I focused a lot of my attention.
Got it. And on the flip side of the equation, of course, is that Democrats tend to be much more frustrated these days with what they view as voter suppression. That, in a number of states, Republicans have taken action to roll back either some of the changes that were made during COVID-19 or, making it a little more challenging to mail in vote. Maybe you need an excuse and you didn't need an excuse before, or there are fewer days of early voting. Are these the sorts of things that are registering alarms at all for these swing voters, or is this more something that Democratic voters are concerned about, but not so much these folks in the middle?
These folks in the middle are not process focused in terms of a lot of these issues. Mm-hmm. You get a couple of people who are concerned about these things, and I had one guy talked about gerrymandering being a concern. But for the most part, it's often stunning what these folks don't pay attention to, and contrast with what they do pay attention to. Like, for example, I asked them to rattle off the things that they've seen higher prices on. They can just tell you off the top of their head, more for this. That's you've seen this, I'm sure, in your groups too, right? This is the kind of thing where it affects them day to day, and they are hypersensitive to those types of things. But I ask questions like, how many of you heard, this is a couple months ago, how many of you heard the news that Friday night Congress passed the president's infrastructure bill? Almost nobody knew that it had happened.
Yeah.
So, there's just a lack of awareness of things happening in state capitals and the U.S. Capitol. They're just not tracking this stuff closely and barely know about it.
So let's talk then about the things that they really are focused on. And we know cost of living and inflation has been a huge issue. We've been talking about it on the show for over a year, but it's one where we're really in the last couple of months have seen it pop up in polls. As gas prices have gotten higher, it's not just, if you need to buy a used car, you're shelling out a lot. It's, do you need to buy clothes and food and gas, which is pretty much everyone. So in your groups, a big criticism of Biden as of late, and this is, I think, Josh Barrow of the very serious podcast, friend of the show as well. He's been on before. He's written a lot about how he's very frustrated that it seems like Biden is focused on the wrong things, that by being so focused on Build Back Better, which has not been messaged well in the minds of Democrats, Republicans would say it's not focusing on the right issues. You've got, you know, Democrats spending all this time this week on the voting issue, which was never realistically going to advance without the supports of Manchin and Sinema, and certainly wasn't done in a way to get Republicans engaged. So you've got them focused on these things that are not the economy, that are not necessarily COVID-19, and what do we do about the Omicron wave? Did these voters feel like Biden is focused on the right things?
Well, so that's been an ongoing issue, but how they feel about Biden. They basically don't think that Biden has delivered. And I've heard that consistently over the months. And that there's just a frustration with him that they don't know where he stands. He's not forceful enough. He's not present enough. There's just they're not happy overall with his performance. And I spent a lot of time in particular focused on his performance around COVID, for example. And of the 13 respondents we had this month, only 5 of them would describe his performance with COVID as good or excellent. The other 8 said it was fair or poor. And one guy who said it was excellent said, well, he didn't encourage people to drink bleach. So you can get the sense of like
that is not a super high bar.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So as my professor, astronomy professor in college, Eric Chasen, said, relative to the amoeba, the paramecium is a genius. And and I was reminded of that quote when I heard the comparison on the bleach. Right. So it's a very low bar. And I was really struck by how they weren't happy. And they were particularly unhappy, Kristen, with the president's inability to balance economic needs and health needs. Only 3 people said he was doing a good job with that. And they rattled off a whole list of reasons of what they thought the problems were. The COVID numbers are going up. Businesses are going down. There are 2-hour plus waits for testing sites. Mm-hmm. They weren't prepared for the Omicron variant. I mean, it was a list of one thing after another after another. And the single most important thing that I thought was really telling, all 13 respondents, all of them, said that they think that the Biden administration should be preparing for an endemic, that we have to learn to live with this. We're always going to have a large contingent of people, not a majority, but a substantial minority, who refuse to get vaccinated. They've accepted this is the way it is in the United States, and that we have to figure out how to deal with it and live with it. So they want a change in strategy. They don't think getting rid of COVID is the smart approach.
Yeah, this is. I wrote a column about this a couple of weeks ago, and that was actually before the Omicron wave really hit in the US and you had those long lines for testing. And it seems more and more like people have just said, as so many people got, you know, COVID over, I got COVID a couple of weeks ago, you know, a lot of people went through it after having done for almost 2 years, quote unquote, all the right things, that it may just seem like, look, avoiding this is going to be like avoiding getting a cold. Like at a certain point, there's just not a lot you can do. But I think that also raises questions about, well, okay, if it is, hey, we're just going to treat this as endemic, then does it start to become in some ways less of a political liability for Biden? I mean, certainly you had Biden and a whole variety of Democrats really criticizing Donald Trump and kind of holding him responsible for every single COVID case, every single COVID death. This is all Trump's fault. This all lays at his feet. They would, of course, not want that standard applied to themselves today. But I also feel like if, you know, we don't hold presidents responsible if a lot of people get colds. We don't hold presidents responsible if a lot of people get the flu necessarily. So I wonder what your take is on if all of a sudden COVID really does become endemic, is it suddenly no longer a political question? Do we no longer talk about, well, are politicians doing the right things about it?
So the question is, you know, what kind of endemic does it look like? Does it look like we basically get our lives back to the way it was more or less in 2019? Is day-to-day life normal? Is work more normal? School more normal? Travel? I think that's the standard that these swing voters are holding Biden to. which is he promised that he was going to get the pandemic behind us, right? So the line you hear from everybody is, I want to get my life back, right? It's they want to have things back to normal. So it's not going to be exactly the way it was before, but is it going to feel like it did back in June of last year when all these people got vaccinated, numbers went down, people who were very attentive to the pandemic suddenly started laying their guard down more for the very first time because they've been vaxxed? And I think that's the question. It was when Delta came back, it's like, oh, wait a second, this thing isn't behind us. We have to deal with it again. And then when Omicron came along, oh, we have to deal with it yet again. It's like this wave after wave of unfulfilled promises. You promised us the pandemic was going to be behind us. You didn't fulfill that. So I think the idea is the degree to which this can be seen as endemic and people start behaving the way they do when there's a bad flu season. If that's where we get to, then that's a very positive outcome for the president. It does depoliticize it. People are just like, okay, this is not the thing I'm worried about now. I might be worried about inflation, crime, all the other stuff that's on people's minds. But when I ask people open-ended, Kristen, what's the number one issue in the news for you these days? Every month, the top issue has been COVID for the last many months.
Yeah.
So it's top of mind for them. They want to be done with it. And I think the president would benefit from politically by treating it as an endemic, if truly it can be treated that way. I think a bad outcome would be treating it like an endemic and then suddenly behaving politically like it's a pandemic still. And that could be a really, really bad outcome. It's just, giving people hope and then taking it away. That to me is the key problem.
Yeah. So my last question then is, we've talked a lot about people's criticisms of Biden, but we haven't talked a lot about how these swing voters think about Republicans. You have the midterms coming up and, we know historically Republicans are very likely to do well. The redistricting picture is a little more complicated. Republicans aren't getting as many seats out of just redistricting as I think perhaps we had anticipated a few months ago, but they're in the stronger position. I'd much rather be Republicans than Democrats going into the midterms. But it also strikes me that Republicans have not run. There's no contract with America. There's no agenda. There's no here's what we're going to do when we're governing. That basically the message is, don't let Democrats have control over everything. Put us in charge so that we can stop the madness. It's very much a negative, we want to stop Democrats kind of message at the moment. Is that enough? I mean, what are these swing voters thinking about Republicans these days?
Well, I don't think they're thinking very much about Republicans as a party all that much. I do ask them, how often do you hear about Trump? And a lot of them tell me they hear about him multiple times a week. So he's still on their minds. But when I have brought up this topic in past months, the responses basically are, we look at the candidates as candidates. We look at them as individuals. What do they stand for? What do they believe? They're not looking at them necessarily as Republicans or Democrats. They're looking at them as candidates. Now, keep in mind, as swing voters, they're less wedded to party, right? I mean, they went from Trump to Biden, for goodness sakes. So, they're much more willing to be flexible in how they perceive candidates. And I think the party idea is in some ways less important to them than what the politician is going to do to help them out and solve the problems that matter most to them. So it's really much more individualized than partisan.
Well, Rich, I'm always so grateful when you're willing to come on the show and talk to us a little bit about what you learned. And I hope we'll get you back on very soon with your next group of swing voters.
Thanks so much for having me.
I have been talking to Rich Tao, president of Engages. Up next, I'm going to be talking to Derek Brown. He's president of The Drink Company, owner of The Columbia Room, a wonderful cocktail bar here in Washington, D.C. But he's also the author of the new book, Mindful Mixology, a comprehensive guide to no and low alcohol cocktails with 60 recipes in it. We're going to talk to him about trends in drinking during the pandemic and his interesting journey as a prominent mixologist who has decided to cut alcohol out of his life. So stay tuned here on The Trendline with Kristen Soltis-Anderson on SiriusXM's POTUS Channel 124. We'll be right back.